Hello, and welcome to episode 164 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We are here today with Bart Tesler, Executive Vice President of News and Talk Programming at Westwood One. Bart, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Very well. It's a pleasure to be here, Jordan. Thank you.
Excellent. The first question I'd like to pose to you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, I've been working at what is now Cumulus and Westwood One for several decades. It's really, in a way, the only job I've ever had, considering numerous consolidations and changes in the industry over the years. Mm-hmm. And it has been a pleasure and terrific to do so. And being in a medium like radio,
right,
where we have relationships with TV networks, we broadcast on terrestrial radio, on satellite radio,
right,
and online, it gives us the opportunity to present, produce, distribute programs in the public interest, which is still something very important to me.
So,
and so we've been doing this for decades, continue to, and get tremendous feedback from listeners.
You've previously mentioned that, radio is a resilient medium, unquote, and have been with radio as you've seen various other mediums rise and fall. There's no more 8-track. Cassettes aren't used anymore. Even the CD player and the CD kind of went by the wayside. Many different mediums, the rise of the internet and the information age, and yet radio continues to play a prominent role in today's society. It's maybe taking different forms, like with the podcast. Can you speak for a moment about how radio is a resilient medium and why?
Great question. And when you see newspapers with video departments and television departments, you know things have really changed. So as we were getting into just a couple of minutes ago, radio today is audio on a traditional radio, mm-hmm, it's audio on a satellite radio, it's audio online, it's audio with live streaming, mm-hmm, with podcasting, and it's video on websites, on radio station and network websites. So what was traditionally radio on your clock radio in your bedroom or your terrestrial radio in your car,
right,
is now every audio and video medium that you're distributing to.
So you say and video. Of course, if you're listening in your car, there is no video. So it's kind of parsed out into video and audio content, and the video just doesn't manifest when someone's listening in on a radio device?
Video has become a big deal for station and network websites for both live streaming and also additional and accretive programming that can be produced for the websites. And so that's where clicks are. That's where website viewers want to go.
Right.
And so you do have networks and stations producing a lot of video today.
So video in a radio station, is that mostly video of the host interviewing or speaking into the microphone? Or what kind of video is that?
It could be exactly that. It could be just a video stream of a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a rock group has come into the radio station to perform,
yeah,
and it's video of that performance online.
Yeah.
It could be a special event that they've done with their talent,
right,
where they're hosting an event in town, whether it's in a theater or at a supermarket or wherever it might be,
sure,
Q&A session. So it runs the gamut from music to spoken word.
So Westwood One, making a transition here to a little bit what we're talking about, it's more than just a radio station. It's I believe the second largest producer of radio content in the United States. Correct me if that's incorrect. But Westwood One is a corporate conglomerate that syndicates radio program content around the United States. Can you speak to our listeners about what Westwood One is and how it affects their daily lives, whether they be in Southwest Arizona or Northeast Maine?
Or around the world online and with our relationships with different broadcasters around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So primarily nationally, but certainly around the world. Westwood One is the largest radio network in the United States. That's the best way to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
We produce and distribute news, talk, music, entertainment, and sports programming.
Mm-hmm.
So for maybe someone like you or a sports fan, you may know us from our exclusive coverage of the Super Bowl or the Final Four coming up this weekend,
mm-hmm,
where Westwood One has exclusive radio rights to those events.
Hmm.
And that means we broadcast the games live,
mm-hmm,
a lot of pregame and postgame and other programming surrounding the games live. We also broadcast those games on Sirius XM satellite radio and online. But we produce a number of new shows. We have news networks, including CBS, CNBC, and the Westwood One News Network. We produce talk shows from Mark Levin, Michael Savage, feature programming from Charles Osgood, many other sports and entertainment programming.
So you have a wide menu of programming that you offer, from sports to entertainment to news. On Public Interest Podcast, previously I've interviewed many journalists who speak about the importance of holding power accountable, of reporting hard news and informing the community such that we can have an informed representative democracy, the importance of the Fourth Estate in ensuring that good governance persists and is perpetuated in this country. But there are many other content areas that Westwood One provides. I'm wondering if you can speak a moment about what consumers desire, what does listenership desire, and how you balance kind of the responsibility that the free press has in relation to our government with the need to satisfy consumers. Is there greater interest in watching the Super Bowl than in listening to news about the Congress? And how do you reconcile the different responsibilities to shareholders and to the free press and informing the public and just to be a successful business?
Well, as is popular today and you hear a lot, it's not a binary decision.
Right.
It can be all of it. It can be both. There is, despite deregulation and lack of requirements among radio stations like there used to be, there still is a tremendous interest in news programming. Our customers at the network are the radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
And so our clients are the programmers of the radio stations who make the decisions of what to put on. In effect, we're a wholesaler going to the retail store, which is the radio station,
mm-hmm.
and then they put on the shelves the product, the programming for the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that the programmers at the radio stations are in sync with the listeners,
right.
but that's not necessarily always the case. But we're looking to produce programming for the radio stations that they believe will work in their stores' stations. And news today is, as popular as ever, that in recent ratings that have come out, just looking back, not only in the election last year, which you would expect 2016 in the fall of 2016 to be a popular time for news, but now going into 2017 and coming up through the first quarter of 2017, when you would expect maybe a drop-off in interest of news, ratings are higher than they've ever been.
Interesting. So ratings are high. And I suppose it sounds as though there's a double revenue model, one being a wholesaler of content to radio stations. And, of course, that is driven primarily by advertising on those local radio stations. So you gotta have listeners in order to generate advertising revenue, and in order to figure out how many listeners you have, it sounds like rating agencies are the way to go. Are there many rating agencies, and is there any danger that they are inaccurate? For example, if you make an analogy with the financial world, there are Moody's and a few others, Standard & Poor's rating agencies in the financial markets that really misled investors leading up to the 2008 financial crisis. And various movies and investigative reporting have shown that there were perverse incentives for there to be dishonest ranking of AAA bonds, for instance. So if you move back into the media world, is there any possibility that rating agencies, Nielsen for TV and what you have for radio, could potentially be getting it wrong or be incentivized to get it wrong? And could that adversely impact what content is selling and what revenues are produced because of that content?
Yes. it's a great question and a lot of questions within the question. So we'll start with that there is primarily one ratings agency, and that's Nielsen Arbitron.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, there had been a more competitive situation. But Arbitron, once acquired by Nielsen, is the main rating agency for stations. And radio had a long history of a very analog situation. And that is just up until a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
ratings came from diaries
mm-hmm.
that selected listeners would literally write down in a diary radio stations that they listened to and when they listened. Mm-hmm. So you can see that that's not a foolproof system, mm-hmm. that there are a lot of things in terms of memory or intentional distorting right. of listening times could go into the diaries. So in recent years, the industry did go digital. Mm-hmm. And so you now have something that you may have read about called a portable people meter, a PPM. And it's a device that selected listeners will wear, mm-hmm. and it will automatically capture the radio stations that you're listening to. And so far more accurate than a diary situation. In the big markets in most of the country, mm-hmm. the PPM is now the established system. In half the country, in smaller markets, they're still using diaries.
Interesting. So I guess one big part that news plays or that mass media plays in America is not necessarily telling people what to think, but telling people what to think about. So when you have multiple, when you have a smaller number of largely syndicated content producers, you have a greater, I guess you have a potentially a more narrow array of issues which are being presented to people in a more standardized format. Is there, what's the impact, if any, if you've even thought of this question, on the American people and the American consciousness when you think about how there's been, over time, a smaller and smaller array of content producers that are owned by larger and larger entities?
That is true in terms of great consolidation in the industry. Mm-hmm. However, it's still a very competitive business, and there still are multiple content providers, even just in the limited area of terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. So if you take the field that I'm in, which is network radio, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, we produce and distribute CBS, CNBC, and Westwood One News, mm-hmm. but there's also ABC News and Fox News and AP Radio News and NPR and many others out there who are producing and distributing national radio newscasts. So there's a lot of voices out there. Now, you know, there's consolidation at the corporate end, and the parent of CBS, mm-hmm. The parent of ABC, mm-hmm. And so forth, you know, have changed. They're huge companies. They've consolidated over the years, but there's still a ton of voices out there, and that's just on a national syndicated level. Locally, you do have large companies owning bigger groups of stations, but there's still plenty of them and a lot of local voices.
So you've been around, as you mentioned at the beginning of this episode, in this industry for quite some time. In fact, you previously had cited a highlight of your career, just to give listeners a sense of when you really have, how long you've been in this industry. You've mentioned that a highlight of your career was receiving, having news staff receiving a Peabody for covering a Reagan-Gorbachev summit. So we're talking about the 1980s. So under President Reagan, you had deregulation of financial sectors, deregulation of media. Now you could have producers and broadcasters and syndicators all being the same one. I believe there might have been a firewall before that time, before he deregulated the media markets. Can you speak about how media has evolved from the 1980s, 2000, the 90s, the noughts, and now the teens in the 21st century, and specifically from a regulatory perspective and all the mergers and acquisitions that resulted from that deregulation, has news content, has radio changed? To what extent has radio changed, and what has been the impact of that change on the American conversation?
Amazingly, it's pretty consistent and similar. I wanted to give you just a quick no, it hasn't changed. That's not entirely accurate. Mm-hmm. But the big impact was not so much a vertical deregulation. It wasn't that there were regulations preventing a network from owning radio stations, like in the movie business, mm-hmm. where a producer of movies couldn't also own movie theaters. Mm-hmm. It was not like that. The regulations were mostly limits in the number of radio stations you could own, both in each market and nationally, mm-hmm. as well as requirements to produce programming in the public interest. Mm-hmm. And so you've had great deregulation in those areas. And now a company which could only own maybe 7 a.m. and 7 FM radio stations, 14 radio stations, can now own, you know, many hundreds, mm-hmm. 1,000 radio stations. And Our company owns about 450 radio stations. Mm-hmm. iHeart owns about twice that much. A merger which will likely conclude this year between CBS and Entercom mm-hmm. will produce another very large owner of radio stations. So that's a different world, a much bigger business,
right.
and a very different world than in the 1980s. The other thing, of course, is that where we were looked at as a public interest, now we're expected to make money.
Mm-hmm.
We're looked at as a profitable part of the media picture of these companies. You know, no different for television and any other media.
So you're saying that before the deregulation, radio had a public obligation to produce public interest content.
And a requirement that stations carried it.
And is so would so how did they how was public interest content defined, and to what extent does it continue to be broadcast today?
I think it continues to be broadcast in terms of what ideas, new thoughts, new stories anyone can generate in the public interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so in addition to a traditional newscast every hour, mm-hmm. we produce other programming, investigative programming,
mm-hmm.
Anniversary programming mm-hmm. over big events. We have two daily one-hour news magazines, which gets much deeper into the issues mm-hmm. beyond just the headlines. And we found big audiences for this type of programming. And of course, in non-commercial radio, NPR has built a very big business and organization around this type of programming, too. So it's gratifying to see that there still is a significant audience for it.
So transitioning a little bit from the narrative of Westwood One to the narrative of Bart Tesler, you have previously mentioned your affinity for spoken words. Can you elaborate upon that affinity, your passion, your interests, what brings you here, how, you know, your personal interests have aligned with your career, which, honestly, many Americans will not be able to say is the case, and how that, I mean, and why you have chosen to stay with radio, not only with radio, but really with pretty much the same organization throughout your career, which is increasingly rare across society.
I think it's a little bit kismet. It's not planned out as it might appear to be.
Mm-hmm.
I did major in journalism in college and was always interested. I grew up at the time of Watergate, and I was in school at the time that Woodward and Bernstein were all over the story, and that had a big impact on me
mm-hmm.
as well as a lot of other people of my generation and people who at that time went into media. So that was clearly a factor, and I had an interest. But the truth of the matter was I was looking for a job. When I graduated, a friend of mine was having some fun working in sports
mm-hmm.
at a company at that time called the Mutual Broadcasting System, one of the longtime old radio networks,
mm-hmm.
which made the terrific decision not to go into television, and that's why they're not one of the competitors today, although it's actually still part of our company and brand, and we own those archives, which include the old Larry King radio shows and great Mutual sports shows going back to the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for a job. A friend of mine said we're having a lot of fun in sports over here. I came over and gravitated into it. And I think, you know, after that, it is true that my interests aligned with my profession. And I tried to keep that on track, move from sports into news, and was able to get involved in a lot of very interesting news, public affairs, and talk programming over the years.
So the spoken word, it's something one doesn't often hear, you know, of the power of storytelling and that being an actual career option. Obviously, people communicate with the spoken word all the time, but you have a career of enabling spun stories to be distributed for free to listeners, which kind of predates the free app and free website phenomena of the information age and creates, products for the public interest, but also creates profitable businesses off of the spoken word. But what is so appealing about the spoken word in society? What role does it play?
Well, look at podcasting now. So the spoken word is bigger than ever. It's bigger than it's ever been with radio and podcasting and all the forms of audio that we listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does go back to the theater of the mind in terms of entertainment. And to a certain extent, news and bringing somebody to the site of a story, that you create it just with your dialogue, without any visuals, props, makeup, hairdo, or anything else. you're able to create something that in many ways is bigger and larger, again, in storytelling and in entertainment that you would ever be able to do with a visual representation. And in terms of audio, tremendous power and focus without the visual distraction to the scene of the story, to the reporter at the scene of the story with the sound of the story in the background can, you know, create an impression, an involvement of the listener in a way that sometimes the visual distraction loses.
You're alluding to the differences between television and radio, television being, to date, the most prominent, I guess, media form of the last half of the 20th century and early decade of the 21st century. The difference between TV and radio, and you're talking about what's special about radio and how there's content and you're not distracted. Can you speak about the competition between radio, TV, and now online, social media, and other kinds of information dissemination, and why radio continues to have a special place in your heart?
Well, it's all good, and we look at it not as competition, but as additional avenues of exploration. Sirius XM would be one example, satellite radio, which is not a traditional form of radio, not terrestrial radio, something new in the last couple of decades. And that's been an opportunity for us to place our Westwood One newscasts on a number of the Sirius channels, to have our coverage of the Final Four basketball tournament this weekend on Sirius XM channels. And the same with podcasting, both to bring our radio shows to the web, but also we create other shows just for the web. So traditional radio stations and radio networks have gotten into the kind of internet-only business as kind of an adjunct to what we do.
So, Bart, we are approaching the end of this podcast, and as we do so, I'd like to ask a final question. Imagine that you are speaking live for Westwood One in one of your studios, and in fact, we are sitting in a Westwood One studio at the moment, and you're going to talk to listeners about why it is that you've had this career, how you think that by having a career at Westwood One and producing radio content, you have advanced the public interest and made the world a better place. And ultimately, at the end of your career, as you approach the end of your career, what do you hope you will have accomplished or that you have accomplished? What will be your legacy for having devoted decades of your life to advancing the public interest through the spoken word on radio and disseminating content around the country?
Well, there are a lot of satisfactions. I hope the audio quality of this podcast competes nicely with your other podcast, Jordan, because we are in one of the Westwood One studios, and so we appreciate that it should sound very good to your listeners. You have to work hard for the satisfactions, and especially now, it's not any easier than it was before. It's a bigger challenge, and we talked about that during this period that we've had to be together, in that we're working for big businesses. They have a lot of interests. They have significant financial interests. They're public companies in many cases. They have quarterly profits that they have to show. And so you have to find within that framework your avenue where you can have the satisfaction of producing shows that you think have really made a difference. And the awards are nice. I think you mentioned a couple of them, but it's not so much winning the awards. It's what you think you've accomplished with those programs, whether you exposed something that was important for the public to understand, whether it was something emotional that that people appreciated, or something new that they just didn't know or never heard before. And you have the opportunity to sit down, come up with something, say, I think this is important, interesting, entertaining. It's something that I want to do. You can create it, create a show, get it on the air, have millions of people listen to it. That's a terrific satisfaction. The other part of it is just being involved with all the, you know, great people that you get to work with over the years, and especially people who have worked for you, and get to, you know, not only see them succeed, move ahead to tremendous positions within the industry, but even just the opportunity to have employed so many people over the years in the news business is tremendously satisfying.
And that has been Bart Tesler, Executive Vice President of News and Talk Programming at Westwood One, where they believe in the power of sound. Bart speaks about the importance of producing content for listeners as a driving factor throughout his career. He believes in the power of the spoken word as being able to relate a story to the public, to uncovering things about government through investigative journalism, supporting that content, but also providing, if content were a meal, Bart is interested in not only giving the main course with your meat and potatoes being investigative journalism, but he gives you a little bit of a side salad with some sports, and then he has some dessert, the entertainment, and he makes sure that everyone every day is given a complete meal of content around the nation and indeed around the world. He speaks about the growth of the radio industry and the consolidation of the radio industry as changing the manner in which it advances the public interest, but essentially that he has throughout his life been able to stay true to the inherent mission of radio, which is to serve the listeners. He also speaks about the human impact, not only on listeners of individual shows, but the ability he has had to be as a mentor and as an employer to make this business profitable, which ensures that it is perpetuated for the next generation, but also that he has had the opportunity to groom others within the industry who again are able to perpetuate the production of content for millions of Americans and others around the globe. So with that, Bart, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. Great job. It was fun.
And this has been episode 164 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. I'll remind you to subscribe at publicinterestpodcast.com. Listen on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, CastBox, Blueberry Player FM, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And should you have any response to Bart, should you have any comments about this episode, please call 240-630-0380, and your voice could be put live on publicinterestpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.